Hello and welcome back to another PaleoCast. This episode is being released on our second year anniversary, and for that reason we're having a catch up with all of the PaleoCast team and looking back over the last year and ahead to the next. So guys, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hello.
We've only got Joe and Liz here. Laura is actually in Oxford, and I think we'll be adding her into this conversation later on. But we're halfway through 2014.
Yeah, big year.
Yeah, so what have you guys been up to? What's happened?
I just write papers. I just write papers. That's all I do these days.
So
I get to look at fossils. I just have to write papers.
Well, we're talking to paleontologists here, so let's have some details.
All right. Well, I just published a paper with my supervisor on early vertebrate evolution in paleontology, which is open access, so you can go and read it at your leisure. And you know that how I've been going on for the last year and a bit about heterostracans and their bone histology. I've actually written that up now and submitted it, so that's good. It's a weight off my mind. And now I'm writing another paper on something else. And aspids, which are another weird group of jawless fishes that nobody knows about their bone histology. So stay tuned for that.
Well, talking about having a weight on your mind, aren't the heterostracans. Aren't they the fish with the bony head shield?
They're the ones, yeah. So they've got a big fused head shield and then sort of a tail sticking out of that. But they don't have paired fins, they don't have jaws, and they sit somewhere between jawless fishes and the jawed vertebrates that we all belong to.
Okay, so what was this paper actually looking at? What's the specifics?
So they're among the earliest skeletonizing vertebrates, so vertebrates that have a mineralized skeleton, which is related to our mineralized skeleton and all the mineralized skeletons of all vertebrates. And so by understanding their bones and their how they form their bones, and the tissues that their skeletons are made out of, we can get insight into the ancestral condition for skeletons in all vertebrates.
Okay, so it was really just looking at where our skeletons came from.
Yeah, that's the question we're hoping to address. Well, hopefully we have addressed.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh, thank you. I thought you hate fishes.
I like my own bones. So now that I can relate to it, it's not too bad. And Liz, how about you?
I've been busy. I just got back from about 2 months of travelling. I spent a week in Italy at the European Association of Vertebrate Paleontology meeting. And I was in Germany doing some museum visits, looking at some pterosaur fossils. Kind of traveled all around Germany doing that, and then was in the States doing museum visits, and then field work in Canada. Now I'm back to England.
Doesn't sound like too bad.
No, it's just been busy. I guess it's just a lot of traveling. It's nice to be back into kind of normal. I can actually start looking at the fossils that I have got on loan, so that will be fun.
So you're allowed to take some of them home with you?
Yeah, so I was able to take some of the material from Germany back to Southampton with me, which some of it we've got CT scanned already and some of it I'll do when I get back. I've got basically one near complete skeleton of a tapajarid pterosaur, which I'm looking forward to looking at. And a couple
awful.
Of other... Yeah, of course you would say that, Joe. No, it's a really nice 3D, actually... juvenile or sub-adult specimen, so it's pretty cool. Pterosaurs don't get to be preserved 3D very often, so finding a complete one is kind of fun.
Is that just because of the bones, the hollow, aren't they, like
yeah.
birds?
Yeah, because of their super hollow bones, so like bone wall thickness in pterosaurs is often sub-millimeter, so it's really difficult to actually preserve them in 3D. They tend to be crushed completely. But the Brazilian material preserves quite well, So this is all material from Brazil that's at a museum in Germany. So.
And what questions are you hoping to answer? I mean, is it just that the new species that you're looking at?
No, so I'm looking at bone mass and total mass and how bone mass relates to total mass. So what I'm hoping to do is get CT scans of all of the bones, reconstruct kind of a 3D skeleton, and then map the muscles onto it and get a better idea of how the bone mass kind of relates to muscle mass and sort of proportions to get a better idea of its actual total mass, because pterosaur mass estimation is all over the place. So hopefully we'll be able to get a better, more accurate idea of that using CT scans.
You have quite a wide size range of pterosaurs, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
I think a lot of people would have heard of the Astarchids.
Yeah. Yeah, so some of the, I mean, the largest Astarchids, largest pterosaurs are somewhere around 11 or 12 meter wingspans, about the size of a giraffe in height. So they're absolutely massive. Unfortunately, those skeletons don't come from very complete, or what we have isn't very complete. It's kind of like a single wing bone or a couple of big bones. So it makes the mass estimation a little bit more difficult, but that's why what we're kind of hoping is if we can get a good idea of proportion, then maybe some of those more incomplete specimens, if you look at it by proportion and how that relates to mass, we might get a better idea of it. But they're absolutely huge. It's ridiculous.
How big's the smallest one?
Smallest pterosaurs are somewhere around a wingspan of maybe a little bit less than a meter. Around a meter, but that's smallest full-grown pterosaur. They're not anywhere near kind of bird size. They're, if you think of the smallest birds, the pterosaurs aren't anywhere near that. They're all quite a bit bigger, but definitely a massive range.
I always think of them kind of like Petrie.
Yeah.
Out of the Land Before Time.
Oh, I love Petrie.
Something I didn't think we'd be talking about today.
Well, it's a pretty relaxed conversation, so if we want to go like some of the other podcasts and just start talking about films or just random things, you can get drunk if you like.
Which we're at work.
Yeah.
So what about you, David? What has been going on?
Well, I had a lot of work going on for the first half of this year, really. January through to May, I was working on the oil rigs, and so really didn't get any paleo casting done, which was a shame. No interviews in that time, because I'm basically on 24-hour call. Like, so as soon as I'd arrange an interview, I'd get a call from work saying, "No, sorry, you're off to Norway in like 3 hours or something." So it was pretty hard to do anything. So that was like 5 months, which was quite a long period of time to be working like that. But other than that, I managed to get my first paper out. So that took me 5 years to do, and I'm sure I've bored everyone about it already. But it was looking at some chasmatospidids from Siberia, which were just sitting around in a museum in the Paleontological Institute in Moscow for 50 years. Just kind of like misidentified and not really looked at. And I'd gone over there to just visit one or two specimens and ended up with about 40 specimens in total, and then 5 years part-time research just describing all of those and eventually getting it published with help from Dr. James Lansdell from the Paleo After Dark podcast. And so, yeah, I was really happy to get that out, and so I can start working on the next paper, which will take me probably another 5 years or something.
And move to Bristol.
Move to Bristol as well, yeah. So starting my PhD here. So a lot of the money that I got from working that amount of time has gone into self-funding this PhD, which isn't the normal route into getting one. Normally you'd get some money from the government or from a professor to do a particular study, but I'm doing a study of my own design, and so really looking forward to getting that started just around mid-September, but I've already moved down and kind of unofficially started it, which is pretty cool. I'm really looking forward to it.
And what will you be looking at?
So I'm going to be looking at Chelicerate exoskeletons. So Chelicerates are spiders, scorpions, mites, and horseshoe crabs as well. And what I'm going to be doing is melting some of these fossils in acid, basically. They've got an unmineralized cuticle, an exoskeleton. So things like lobsters, crustaceans, and the trilobites have a biomineralized exoskeleton. What that means is that they've reinforced it with calcium carbonate in those cases. And so it makes them... We get a lot more of those fossils because they're easier to preserve because of the chemistry. Whereas the chelicerates and also the insects, they don't biomineralize. And so they just have basically just chitin. And what happens is that when you get a fossil of these, you can put them in acid and that can dissolve the rocks, but it leaves the chitin of the insects and chelicerates. And so you can look at the fossil, well, you can look at the animal without the rock, which is pretty cool, but no one's really ever done that much work on it. And it's been proven that you can get such intricate details from these fossils by taking them out of the rocks and analysing them under a microscope. And I'm hoping to really look at all of these fossils in a really high level of detail that hasn't really been done before, and add a whole suite of morphological characteristics by which we can work out the relationships between the different groups, between the different species, and that will really help us understand where all these chelicerates came from. That's the sound of Joe being
bored.
He's been holding that cough for a good couple of minutes.
I'd say that's the sound of Joe being bored to death.
You done? I'm better.
I was just going to ask, if you're actually like melting down the fossils, like putting them in acid, is it hard to get people to actually let you do that? Like a lot of museums are not very happy with you sticking their fossils in acid.
Yeah, it can be pretty difficult because it is a sort of destructive process. I mean, you're going to lose like the majority of the specimen. Mm. Well, the majority of it is just going to be the rock.
Yeah.
And you get the cuticle out and you can still put that on the slide and have that there. So the important bit is still going to remain.
Mm.
But the problem comes with if the fossil's fractured or if it's only partially preserved. And then you melt it, then it all disintegrates.
Yeah.
And you've got basically a 10,000 piece jigsaw, which might take me the majority of my PhD to reconstruct. So it's really choosing the right specimens. And as part of this research, I'm going to have to go out and find my own new specimens that I can then dissolve. So there's going to be a lot of field work. It's going to be a really hands-on, practical PhD. So I didn't just want to be sitting around on a computer like Joe.
Write papers!
Where would you do the field work for that? Where is that?
So the main place would be Ursul or Saaremaa, which is a island off of Estonia. Which has got pretty extensive Silurian deposits, and you can get some absolutely beautiful
fish from there.
And then amongst the fish you can get some Eurypterids and some other kinds of chelicerates.
But are other things than fish in life, Joe. Come on.
Well, the nice thing is that we do have a nice overlap, you and I, Joe.
Yeah. Our things occur in the same beds more often than not.
Oh dear. Well, let's not tell your girlfriend that.
formations are things occur in the same formations often, more often than not.
Well, there you go. Without a script, we descended. Right, so let's take a look back at the year in terms of what PaleoCast has been up to. So we've had, we just reached a really amazing milestone of 50,000 downloads from all of you guys. So thank you all very, very much for downloading, and we have hoped you've all enjoyed them. We are now at 53,000 since then. And a fun little fact is that if we started the show with the advertising that was offered to us, put the adverts in the middle of the show, we would now have made £53 from that.
Yeah.
We're £53 poorer by not subjecting you to adverts.
Terrible decision, obviously. £53.
So you should all feel £53 better off for not having to sit through adverts.
And in terms of the episodes that we've released, we've done quite a few conferences. So I went to GSA, Geological Society of America, and SVP, the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology. And that was just before end of 2013, it was, yeah. And that was really a highlight for me, being able to go to those conferences in America and just talk all day, every day, about paleontology to all the famous paleontologists.
Including Bob Bakker, who
yep.
basically interviewed you, didn't he?
Yeah, that was a highlight. Bob Bakker and Jack Horner, both really titans of the dinosaur world that I managed to get short interviews with. But yes, the Bob Bakker one was probably the most entertaining one, and if you haven't yet heard that, I think it's the GSA Day 3 podcast, so find that online on the website and give it a listen. What about you guys? What were your favourite interviews?
In terms of the ones that I did, I really liked the GOAT one. I've been wanting to do the Great Ordovician Biodiversification event for a long time, and it was really great talking to Dave Harper, this immensely knowledgeable man who knows absolutely everything there is to know about Ordovician biodiversification. So that was a really fun episode to do once we actually worked out how to do streaming. And I learned a lot from your interview with the jellyfish man, I've forgotten his name.
Graham Young.
Yes.
Enjoyed that one as well.
So yeah, that was really, really interesting.
I love Paleozoic squidgy things.
Really?
Nothing. If it doesn't have any bones in it, then I like it.
Really?
Yeah, the Great Ordovician Biodiversification Event episode, the GOBE one, was one of our really popular ones, alongside the mass extinction ones as well. So if you want more episodes about theory, then please let us know and we can have a look at that.
Yeah.
Be nice to get something maybe about the Red Queen hypothesis.
Red Queen, yeah. It's this important evolutionary process. It says, this is racking the brain. The faster you run, the... Oh, I've forgotten it. Faster.
What, the actual quote?
Yeah, what is it?
It takes all the running you do to stay in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you've got to run twice as fast as that. Isn't it? In the
it's
actual
like
quote.
That. Yeah, it's something like that.
Which is basically, you've got to carry on evolving just to maintain the status quo.
Yeah.
If you rest on your laurels, then you're going to suffer in terms of evolutionary fitness in the long run.
I think I need to revise my Lewis Carroll. we've also had some requests for an episode on early tetrapod evolution, so I'm busy writing up a script for that at the moment.
Yep. And also Burgess Shale, a bit more about that. So it looks like we're both probably having a little trip to Cambridge.
Yeah.
Any favourites for you, Liz?
Well, I haven't done any interviews yet, but I think probably as a listening standpoint, I would say the two that I enjoyed was the more recent Anomala Carotids with Alison Daly. I quite enjoyed that one. Being more of a vertebrate person myself, I've always thought that Anomala Carotids were quite interesting. And I think she did a really good job explaining them, especially without a lot of pictures, trying to explain what they actually look like and what they are. I think I enjoyed that one. But I also liked the marine reptiles of Svalbard, because that's a little bit more kind of what I am interested in. And having just spent, I listened to that just after I was in Norway, actually visiting Jørn Hurum's lab. So that was really interesting to see the talk on it after I had a chance to go and see the fossils. So that was quite interesting for me.
They're actually back out in the field right now as we speak, aren't they?
They've just arrived back. So a good friend of mine actually is one of the team members. They just got back from field work maybe 3 days ago, 3 or 4 days ago. So they're now...
Yeah, that's Aubrey?
Yeah. Aubrey is one of the PhD students working in the lab. So she's now back. She's doing her PhD with me in Southampton. But they just got back on a new expedition. They're actually looking at some Triassic stuff this time. So they'll have new stuff.
Yeah, if you want to see Aubrey, she's on the Marine Reptiles of Svalbard episode. She's given a lecture.
Yep.
A talk at the very bottom of the screen, so give that a listen.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll love us for that.
Hi, Aubrey. So what were you looking at Jørn's lab? Ichthyosaurs?
No, not ichthyosaurs. I was looking at a pterosaur. They have one whole pterosaur. I don't even mean whole. They have one pterosaur specimen in their collection, which is an incomplete Solnhofen pterosaur that nobody has ever done any research on. And I was at a conference last year, and Jørn came up to me and said, hey, you should come look at the specimen. Nobody's ever looked at it. I think you'd be interested in it. And because of the way that it's preserved, you can see the internal structure. So the bones are broken, so you can see things like the cortical thickness, which for me is what's interesting, looking at how thick the bones are. So I spent a couple of days up there looking at it, and I'll see what I'll be able to do with it. It was pretty cool, though. I enjoyed it.
So it's a conference season soon, Paleontology Olympics.
Oh, yeah, every 4 years. Paleontological World Cup,
yeah.
I think is better, because everyone likes football better than track and field. At least I do.
Everybody except North America.
Yeah. Yes, so IPC4. I went to the travel agents yesterday to book myself some flights.
Woo-hoo. I booked mine, so me and Dave get to go to Argentina.
Well, my flights have to be cancelable because I might be going to work, so I don't quite know if I'm going yet.
I'm not
Liz,
going.
Liz, you're quiet.
No, I'm not going. I'm sad.
Are you going to SVP?
Yes, I will be at SVP. I think, Joe, you're going to SVP
too,
aren't you?
Even I'm going. I don't usually go because it's a load of pterosaur people.
It's not only pterosaur people.
But,
you should come to the pterosaur conference next year, Joe.
I shan't be going to. This year it's in Berlin, so I can justify a flight over there. It should be really good. I've never been to Berlin, so I'm really looking forward to it.
That's very nice.
Been to Berlin, but not to SVP, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I've been to both, and I can attest that both are pretty cool. Even though I'm not a vertebrate worker, being there just arthropods and just having a whole, like, 3 or 4 days of vertebrates, kind of gets a bit too much, but I keep myself busy doing interviews and then editing all night. So, got that to look forward to. But now I've got you two to help.
Yeah.
You can do it. Joe's face. I wish we had a video on this.
One of my office mates, another Joe O'Reilly, is doing a talk at SVP, and it must be the only talk in the entire conference that doesn't have anything to do with vertebrates. He's doing a talk called the phylogeny of insects, but it just so happens to be in the molecular symposium session. So he's going to be talking to a room full of people that don't care at all about insects.
I'll care. I'll just sit straight in front of him and just gaze into his eyes as he's talking about it.
He's also going to be really, really impressed that we're talking about him to the internet.
Hi, Joe. It'll be good being in Germany, though, because we've got quite a following there as well. It's one of our biggest listenerships, so it'd be nice to do something Germany-centric.
Yeah.
It'd be good to do something on the Solnhofen. There's so many nice Lagerstätte over there. I mean, Lagerstätte is a German word, so...
There's Messel as well, Messel Quarry.
Yeah.
You should really do something on...
Hunsrück Slate.
Oh,
lovely
fishes.
Holzmarden, yeah. There's tons of stuff. We should do a German Lagerstätte series. I mean, you could talk.
You could do so many episodes on.
You could do a whole year of just one Lagerstätte, just the incredible things that you found there. I mean, you've got your pterosaurs from Solnhofen.
Yeah.
You've got Archaeopteryx from there, and it's just so much going on.
Messel has giant flying ants.
Really?
Yeah, it has the largest... So they're all flying queens that fell into the lake.
Wow.
And it has these absolutely enormous, so like up to 5-6 centimetre long ants.
Wow.
It's like nightmares.
Yeah, amazing. Everyone hates Flying Ant Day. Imagine back in the Eocene, Flying Ant Day.
Jeez.
It hurt when they flew into you.
Are you doing GSA this year at all? It's in Vancouver!
I was thinking about it. It depends on whether I go to the IPC or not. It'd be nice to piggyback them both together, but I think that it's just like,
so
it's like a week or two or something after IPC4 finishes, isn't it?
When does IPC finish?
It's something like the 4th of
October.
It's a couple of weeks. I think... GSA starts on like the 19th or something of October. I think it's 19th
to
21st. Vancouver's beautiful. I'll
drive up.
Talk about the amazingness of Canada. No, Vancouver is beautiful though. It would be... I wish I could go to GSA, but that's not going to happen.
So you're not going just to SVP?
Yep. I mean, I did the European one. And then I'm doing SVPCA, and I'm doing SVP, so I can't do any of the other big ones.
See, so this is why you should get into academia and do paleontology. You just get to go places, say conferences, and chat to people, and it's great.
Or you could stay at home and just listen to us. That's the alternative.
And
if you're fed up, get out and be an academic yourself. So looking around the world, our biggest audience, as I'm sure you know this, is the United States. Yeehaw. Maybe you shouldn't put that bit in. it's almost twice as big as our next one, which is the UK. Then we've got Australia, Canada, Germany, Ireland, France, Spain, Switzerland, and the Netherlands, rounding up the top 10. So well done, you lot. So hopefully we're going to keep this going for another year at least. So, in that year, what's going to be going on?
Well, as I said, I've got an early Tetrapod episode to record. I'm thinking about an episode... So we haven't really done anything about sort of the history of paleontology, and there's these amazing characters that were sort of the forefathers of paleontology. We touched on it briefly with the American Bone Wars episode.
And also with the forests in Gilboa.
Yeah, but I'd like to devote an episode to Roderick Murchison, who was an eminent geologist and paleontologist over in Victorian England, who coined the name Silurian. He was a really interesting man and had this amazing achievement with respect to our science. So I'd like to do an episode devoted to him, I think.
And he did it all based on graptolites, was it?
I think a range of organisms. But yeah, he used biostratigraphy. It's one of the pioneers of biostratigraphy. So where you look for fossils as kind of like a... Hold on.
Joe, you did this as a job.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good
We worked for like 2 years together doing this.
I'll just... All right. It's where you use... Yeah, so he was a pioneer of... He was a pioneer of biostratigraphy, which is where you use fossils to correlate different rocks within the same age group.
The relative aging of strata.
Yeah. So
based
it's like
on fossils.
Kind of like stamp collecting.
Pretty much. And academically, what are you going to be doing?
So I've got to finish this. This paper on an aspids that I'm writing, another group of early fishes. And then, excitingly, I get to go on and do some actual data collection again.
Hey.
So I'm going to hopefully, touch wood, grind up and sequence its genome.
A dead one or a live one?
Well, I hope
dead.
It will be dead by then.
Well, you know what I mean. I was going to say fossilised or alive, but I guess it has to be recent to get its DNA. Yeah.
Hopefully the genome will help me understand the pattern and the tempo of vertebrate evolution.
So it's not been sequenced before?
No.
What?
I know.
Wait. So we're relying on a paleontologist to sequence a genome. That really surprises me, because I thought that the biologists would have been busy sequencing everything, and a is really an obvious animal to sequence.
I would have expected it to have been done.
Still been done. Well, I think we've had genes from the sequence, but not the whole genome as of yet.
And is that something that you can just do? Is it within your capabilities to sequence a or are you outsourcing it?
I'm going to learn.
Wow.
Leaving it
That's
to
actually
Joe.
Really, really impressive. Are you actually?
Yeah.
Oh. That's cool.
The sequencer. It's going to be good.
Highlight of your PhD. Sequencing a
How far are you into your PhD? Aren't you?
So second year.
Now?
I'm just finishing my second year now, yeah.
So you'll be going into your final year?
Yeah.
And in that final year, when you're supposed to be writing up your thesis, you're going to be...
Sequencing a
Learning to sequence a
Yeah, I've kind of done it sort of the reverse order. I got loads of data in my first year, and then I've spent a lot of my second year writing up those findings.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the third year, I'm going to do some more data collection and write that last bit up.
Nice. You confident?
Yeah.
You going to get it all done?
I think so. I hope so.
And then are you looking at postdocs at the same time?
Yeah, I'll have to start looking for postdocs next year.
And you're going to be so busy.
Yeah, it's going to get pretty intense.
And Liz, what about you?
Well, I'll probably actually do some interviews maybe for PaleoCast. That seems like probably a good idea. I have a couple of ideas of more vertebrate-y things, since you guys do less vertebrate-y things. No, I've got a couple of ideas for some episodes of some of my old supervisors and people that I know, so I'll think about that. And then I'm just going into the second year of my PhD, so I'll be working on that. I have a whole bunch of CT data waiting for me when I get back to Southampton, so I will probably be spending many months looking at that and writing up a couple of papers that I have to do that have absolutely nothing to do with my PhD, but I have several projects going that have nothing to do with it, so I have to do that at some point.
Oh, come on, tell us about them. What?
Well, there's one from my undergrad.
Wow.
On Centrosaurus, dinosaur. I have to do that still. It's almost done, but I still have to publish that. And I'm working on one on some early mammal stuff from Wales that I did in my year off between my master's and my PhD at Bristol.
Just for fun?
Basically, it was kind of combined with the Bristol Dinosaur Project. They needed some volunteers to do stuff, and one of them was look at this fissure material from Wales. So I wasn't doing anything, so I volunteered to do that. I've got to write that up. What else is there? Oh, there's another pterosaur paper that is unrelated to my PhD, but I'm going to work on that with my old supervisor in Canada.
Sounds like you got your fingers in many pies.
Yes, probably too many. We'll see how that works. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on that I just need to kind of sit down and get done at some point.
Yep. And I've spoken about what I'm going to be doing already. That and probably working and probably doing a load of paleocast stuff. So,
you need to go off and talk to Laura.
Yeah. We just have Laura at the end of the show.
She's the climax, obviously.
She's
the finale.
She can just talk for a good 10 minutes straight at the end.
Yeah.
Laura, now
I see
you
she's
tell
turned
us
up.
Everything.
Got Alison, Dave Harper, European Geosciences Union, Judge Poynar from episode 3. Joe, you're online.
Oh, great.
We've got John on as well, and Xiaoming Wang. Should we call one of them? Just have an impromptu episode.
I think my sound's on, so if you call me, then it'll go off in the office upstairs. I might get Joe O'Reilly answering.
Yeah, maybe not. Right, so I think that should do us for this episode. Don't forget that if you have a request, please post it up on Facebook or tweet it to us.
If you have any questions about centrosaurs, be free to ask Liz.
Yes.
Everything. She's the expert.
I will answer all of your questions. That's why it's taken me 5 years to publish this paper.
Oh, wow. You're still going? 5 years?
Well, I finished my undergrad in... Okay, not 5 years. I finished my undergrad in 2010. So I'm only at 4 years right now.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Okay.
I thought you were going to beat me because it took me 5 years for me to do mine. I thought that was the longest anyone's ever spent on a paper, but...
Nope. Oh, no. It's not too far off. Not too far.
So, questions to Liz?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, just ask us all questions. If you even care about any of our research. I don't suppose I'll get many Chasmataspidae questions. And then I guess...
Although, you did get some paleocast entries on Chasmataspidae.
Yes, I did.
If I seem to recall listening to the paleoart episode, you did say something about sending people things if they did that, didn't you, Dave?
Maybe. We didn't even cover the paleo art episode. How good was that? I hope you all were following it on the social media. And if you've not seen any of the pictures, make sure you have a look on the website. It's got its own separate little bit from all the entries that we had into the competition. We really enjoyed receiving them all and looking at them. They're absolutely fantastic. And they're still being shared around Facebook and Twitter. So... thanks for everyone who entered. We'll have to do the same again next year or something.
Yeah, I think it was fun. We got a lot of really nice entries from that.
Lots of dinosaurs.
Yeah, I think we'll have to do
a
Paleozoic only.
A fish only.
Or encourage people somehow to do non-dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I mean, I like dinosaurs, but there is other stuff than dinosaurs. Like pterosaurs!
Basically, they're flying dinosaurs.
Oh.
Joe.
Yeah, that's it.
You
Laters.
Just ruined it. Now you're dying.
Right.
You're gonna have fun editing this.
You know what? I think it's gonna go in pretty much unaltered, apart from this end bit. If you have any episodes that you'd like to hear, please post up any requests on Facebook or tweet it to us. And don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe. Thank you all very much for listening to our first 2 years, and here's to the next one.
Cheers.
Cheers.
PaleoCast was brought to you by Dave Marshall with Joe Keating and Laura Soule. It was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association, with music supplied by the Ocean Collective. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material to this episode and for our archive of past programmes. Subscribe to our Twitter feed at paleocast and like us at facebook.com/paleocast to get all the latest news.
So we're now in the show after the show, and we've managed to catch up with Laura. So where were you?
I was in Oxford, but I was at work when you guys had your little get-together, so couldn't drop in, unfortunately.
Well, your plan worked. The show after the show is now dedicated just to you.
Yes.
So why don't you start off by telling us what you've been doing over the past year?
I've been doing quite a few things, I guess. So I finished off a couple of pieces of work and presented one of them at a big conference in the States. So that was really good. I really enjoyed that. The conference was Evolution. If anyone is thinking about going to Evolution, they should. It's really interesting. And it's got biologists as well as paleontologists, so that's fun. But yeah, so I submitted a paper, which was about taxonomy and using it in different evolutionary analyses. So I think I spoke about this on PaleoCast before a while ago, but basically I was interested in finding out if you can use knowledge of the taxonomic relationships between things. So that's just the groups that people put fossils in when they first find them usually. So, you know, what other species they're more similar to. If you can use that in evolutionary analyses, because if you want to understand things about, you know, the rate at which a group has evolved or something like that, then you need a phylogeny to do it. So that's an actual hypothesis of the ways in which the species are related to each other. And you figure those out by doing some relatively complicated analyses. But with a lot of fossil groups, you can't really do that. Because you don't have enough data, or the organisms that you're looking at are very difficult to differentiate from one another. That's kind of prohibitive. It means that a lot of people who might be interested in doing macroevolutionary analyses on their groups can't, because they don't have a phylogeny. So I was interested in finding out if you can just use taxonomic information instead. The year I finished off that piece of work, and that's all. Submitted.
Can you use taxonomic information instead? Does it work?
You have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. There are scenarios in which it will work, but you have to be very careful. And it also raises questions about whether or not actual phylogenies of fossil taxa are necessarily that useful in the first place. But that's a whole other big question. But yeah, so it looks like there are circumstances under which you can, but, you know, it's very important to think very carefully about the group that you want to use, how many taxa you have in your tree, and that kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of the time, hopefully, in theory, if you're careful, a taxonomy should give you a result that's as good as a phylogeny would.
Okay, so the taxonomy and phylogeny, is the difference between those just that the phylogeny is quantified, it's been supported by mathematics?
More or less. So there's specific algorithms for working out, you know, what you really think the evolutionary relationships between a group of species is, whereas taxonomy is, you know, a very basic thing, really. So I think probably we had to learn about it in school. Everything has a species, a genus, a family, a class, and an order. And when you find a new fossil, you have to categorize it under all those things. So you decide what things you think it's more closely related to based upon, you know, looking at it, basically. Whereas a phylogeny is it has to have branch lengths. That's what's important about a phylogeny as well. So if you've got a phylogeny of fossils, the branch lengths will be scaled to time. So, you know, it's basically supposed to be the actual amount of time that a species existed for. Yeah, but it's all figured out with lots of very complicated algorithms.
That sounds complicated. I'll just stick with taxonomy, I think. Right, so we've also been doing a lot of paleocasting.
We have.
So what's been your highlight of the past year?
Can I say my own thing?
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, obviously I really liked going to Australia because I got to speak to paleontologists that I definitely wouldn't have done otherwise, and face to face as well, so that was good. But yeah, I think my highlight was talking to Alison Daly about anomalocaridids. Because she's a good interviewee. She's very enthusiastic, so that's nice. And yeah, they're really cool organisms, and obviously it's not the kind of paleontology that I do, so it was really fun to talk to her and learn a bunch of new stuff about incredibly old animals.
Yeah, some of the first ones that we see in the fossil record, and we're still finding new ones and learning new things about them.
Yeah, and it was really cool to speak to her because, you know, I think as we probably discussed in the episode, we have to learn about these things if you do a degree in paleontology, obviously. But loads of stuff's happened recently and they found lots of new ones. So it's the story's a lot more interesting than it was when I learned about it while I was doing my undergrad.
Right. So looking ahead to next year, what are you going to be doing? Any more papers? Are you going to be finishing your PhD?
Yeah. So I'm supposed to finish sort of midway through next year. That's when my funding runs out. So I will be done by then.
Oh, you tell yourself that.
Yeah, that's what we all tell ourselves. And yeah, I should have, by the time I've handed in my thesis, hopefully I'll have two papers out. So I've got this taxonomy one that should be out by the end of this year. And then there's another piece of work that I finished this year, which was the work that I presented at Evolution, which was about the phylogenetic structure of extinction in the fossil record. So I'm in the process of writing that up, so that should be out by the time I'm done as well, which is all right. Two papers before I hand in, hopefully.
Any sneak preview on that paper?
Yeah, the basic story is that when people look at extinction in the fossil record, particularly with vertebrate groups, because the data is a lot more sparse than with invertebrate groups or more recent geological history, you usually only look at the extinction rate. So I was interested in seeing if there were other ways of looking at it. And one possibility is to look at the phylogenetic structure. So that basically means when taxa go extinct, are they more likely to go extinct at the same time as other species that they're closely related to, or are they more likely to go extinct at a different time to things that they're closely related to? So if it's at the same time, you get clustered extinction, and if it's at a different time, you get overdispersed extinction, and obviously there's a scale in between. But yeah, so I was just interested as to whether you could actually look at this in the vertebrate record, if the data was good enough, and what it told us, what the patterns were that you could see. And I looked at it over loads of different groups and a very long period of time. So through the second half of the Phanerozoic and into the middle Mesozoic. Sorry, not Phanerozoic. Second half of the Paleozoic and into the middle Mesozoic. got my zoics wrong. So it turns out that it depends on the group and the time period that you're looking at, but the PT mass extinction is very clustered for three major groups. So that's an interesting thing that I'm going to try and figure out. But fish are hardly ever clustered. They don't really care about what's going on. They just go extinct whenever they feel like it. yeah, so it's just a sort of, it's a kind of a, another way of looking at things. And hopefully the idea is it can help us to untangle what's actually going on, you know, or why things go extinct at certain times, when they might go extinct. And the bigger picture thing here is that people are obviously very interested at the moment about when and why things go extinct because of climate change and biodiversity issues that we're having at the moment, and the possibility that we are actually entering another mass extinction. So people really want to know basically how extinction works. And so although I'm obviously not going to solve that problem with one PhD, hopefully what I'm doing will contribute to helping figure that out.
And are you going to be going to any more conferences in the next year?
Yeah, so I'm going to IPCC4.
Hey, so am I.
You are?
Yeah, got it confirmed. Yay. Like, in between the time we recorded this episode and then this bit that we're doing now, I got told that I'm not going to be going to work. I'm actually going to be going to Argentina to have all the red wine and steak and fossils.
I'm excited about all the red wine and steak. And obviously, I'm excited about recording PaleoCast.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Yeah, so I'm presenting some work at that as well as doing the PaleoCast stuff. So I'll be very busy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then hopefully I'll go to Palace at the end of the year as well.
Ah, good. Where is Palace this year?
Leeds.
Yeah. Close to home for me.
Yeah, that's well, okay. that's where my family comes from, is Leeds, so I can go.
Really?
Go see everybody.
I thought you were a posh southerner.
Yeah, I am, but I'm of northern heritage.
Right, okay. As a little segue. For PaleoCast, are you going to be too busy to do any PaleoCasting?
Hopefully not. Well, we've got have you mentioned that hopefully we're doing a thing at Oxford at the beginning of September?
Nope. I've not mentioned that at all. I don't know. Yeah, it's fine. Let's talk about it because I'm going to be recording it. So go for it. Give us the lowdown.
So there is a professor at Oxford, Martin Brazier, who's been very influential. He does mostly sort of early time period paleontology. So he's done a huge amount in his career, but kind of right from very early life, the beginnings of life on Earth, and looking at where you can begin to detect that in the fossil record, and then looking at things like the Burgess Shale and a lot of stuff on the Ediacaran fauna. So those are soft-bodied organisms, and they're some of the first large organisms that you can see in the fossil record. So he's had a very long and prolific career, and he's retiring this year, and to sort of honour his work that he's done at Oxford and for his retirement, they're having a symposium. So they've got loads of really interesting speakers that are kind of talking about all the different aspects of they're people who currently work on the different things that Martin's done over the course of his career. There'll be loads of really great talks coming out of that. And we're going to record that and hopefully do some interviews with some people. So, well, Alison will be there again, and then like I said, there's a whole bunch of other big important people coming.
So hopefully we'll bring that to you, so long as I manage to work the recorder unlike progressive paleontology. So fingers crossed with that one. But we've got that to look forward to. And in terms of interviews in future, have you got anything planned?
I just recorded, so it'll be coming up soon, an interview with Tracy Ayes, who is a micropaleontologist. So she was really interesting to talk to because she sort of is a crossover between paleontology and climate science. So she's a lot of very interesting things to say about what we can actually use fossils for understanding in terms of climate. So that was cool. And then I'm hoping to talk to some more people about some macroevolutionary stuff.
Okay.
Obviously, that's what I'm mainly interested in. And, you know, it's really interesting and great talking to people about, you know, the fossils that they dig up and what those kinds of things mean. But it would be good to get a few more macro talks in about, you know, what we can actually do with that data and the kinds of things that people are, kinds of questions that people are actually trying to answer by collecting all this fossil data.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
So I've got some people in mind for that. So hopefully, if you guys are interested in that, then I can do some more of those.
Yeah, let us know. Leave a comment if you want to hear any more of that stuff. But who is your dream interviewee?
Oh, that's a hard question.
It's not one that I've asked of the other guys in the full episode, or that I even know myself, really. So it's pretty unfair asking you.
Well, there are, you know, there are a lot of people that, oh, who would be good? There are some. Oh, I think. Well, yeah, I'd really like to interview Gene Hunt. So maybe I'll try and get hold of him.
Who's Gene Hunt? What's he do? Macro?
Yes, he does. He does micro paleontology, but like macro evolutionary stuff. So he specializes in ostracods. He works at the Smithsonian, I think. Yeah. I did a short course a couple of years ago, and he was one of the teachers on that, and he was a really excellent teacher. And I've sort of run into him a couple of times since then at conferences, but he's just, answering big questions in very intelligent ways, trying to understand things like how you can model evolution, and what you can actually say about what's going on with macroevolutionary things, and whether or not it's an important question is whether or not the patterns you see are actually significantly different from just random patterns. And he's been important in figuring those kinds of things out. Mainly understanding how the, like, what the most appropriate models we can use for macroevolution are. So, but yeah, he's a really smart guy and he's really nice to talk to as well.
Yeah, that'd be a good follow on for the episode that we're releasing next on ostracods, an introduction to them.
Okay, well, there you go. Introduction to ostracods, and then maybe I'll try and get Gene to talk about macroevolution.
Yeah. And in terms of who I'd love to get, maybe Simon Conway Morris. Mentioned him.
Oh, yeah. So. He would. Yeah, I think he would be great.
Burgess Shale.
He's a very good speaker.
And then I might also like to interview Attenborough. That'd be a cool one.
Could we get him?
Don't know. I could do my Attenborough impression and pretend we're interviewing him.
I'd be like, hello, David.
Hello there, Laura. No, let's not do that.
Yeah, let's not.
Well, I think that's a good place to end. Right, well, thank you very much for joining us, Laura.
Yeah, no problem. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye.